Hi, I'm Emily Durham, and today I'm going to teach you how not to go broke building your career.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Don't Go Broke Trying. I am your host, Rennie. And if you're new here, Don't Go Broke Trying is a podcast all about how to not go broke trying to live your best life. If you are new here, make sure you check out all the links in the show notes. We have an Instagram page, we have a TikTok, we have a YouTube channel, we have all of the things. And if you are watching on YouTube, you can already see my beautiful guest, but if not, you should go check out our YouTube channel immediately. Today, I have the phenomenal Emily, the recruiter, Emily Durham, okay? I bring you a lot of amazing guests, but this is a guest I am especially excited to bring you. Emily is a tech recruiter. I have personally known Emily, I don't even know how many years, six, seven.
Don't make me count. Don't do that. We've known each other for 12 months.
Yeah.
Because we're both 23.
Yes. Oh yeah. We're babies. Yeah. Just graduated. But yeah, I've known Emily for a while and I'm very excited for her to be here. So she's going to be teaching us all about how to not go broke trying to build our careers. So hi, Emily.
Oh, Rennie, thank you so much for having me. I feel like this is so overdue. Like, yes, I'm so excited.
I know, right? We should have been collaborating from time, but
it
was time, and now we're here, and I'm excited for you to be here.
It's happening. I almost wore purple in your honor, and then I was like, so but what if it's the wrong shade of purple? I'm like, what if she's wearing purple too?
I know, it could
have
been so clashy, close, right?
It could have been a moment. Yeah. So I was like, you know what, we'll do purple's cousin, yeah, pink, and that's just gonna have to be good
and
enough.
You're slaying, and I love the shirt.
Thanks, girl. I really know that love merch.
It. What does it say for those who may not be watching,
well,
they're listening?
Right above my chest today, this is our classic Thrive in Your 9-to-5 t-shirt, but we've got so much, and I'm so excited. It's launching at the end of the month.
Yay.
So the shirts go crazy. I'm so excited.
Hopefully, I think this will be released when the shirts are also released. So we will make sure to leave the link to the shirts in the bio so anyone can purchase them if they would like to. But tell us a little bit about you. Who are you? Who's Emily the recruiter? Tell us a little bit about you.
Oh my gosh. I still laugh, I think, when I refer to myself as Emily the recruiter, but it's a thing now. Like, I have accepted that it's a thing. But I have been in talent acquisition for 7.5 years, which feels, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
Like, I blinked, I woke up, it's been 7 and a bit years.
Wow.
And I started actually at a bank. That's where Rennie and I initially met. And I was doing early careers recruiting there, did a lot of like program work. And I just fell in love with talent. And then I moved to my current employer. Shout out to Intuit. We love TurboTax. We love QuickBooks.
We do.
We really do. And I started working there and I just had students failing interviews at a rate that I had never seen.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. Like, 'cause at BMO, so many people who applied came from Ivy League schools, and they had access to all of these different academic programs, all of these different resume workshops. And in tech, a lot of people who are engineers are self-taught, which they're not being taught how to interview, which is so unfortunate because you can be an amazing engineer and you just don't know how to answer, tell me about yourself.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you're not great. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast. I'll do 2 or 3 episodes. That's going to be it. I'll send it to students in advance of interviews. Done. Within a month, it was the number one trending careers podcast in North America.
Did you hear that, guys?
screaming and crying.
I love it.
I want to put that on a t-shirt.
Yes, you should.
But I was like, oh my gosh, is there a market for this? Should I be doing this a little bit more?
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the start. So now I'm on Instagram and TikTok, still have the podcast, mm-hmm, and it's all focused on helping people thrive in their 9-to-5. Like, how do we feel great about the work we do and how do we ace those interviews and make the monies that we need to make?
Yeah,
so it's been wild.
Make sure you follow Emily on all the platforms. Her TikTok, especially, I love her Instagram, Straight Shooter Recruiter, the podcast. Like, it's everywhere.
Thank you, my friend. You are everywhere.
You're doing amazing things and you can all learn a lot from her. So please, I know I go on your page, I'm like, wow, we have so many of my friends follow you, right?
Same. I've seen that on yours too. I can't remember who I was speaking to the other day. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go record with Rennie. They're like, Rennie the resource?
Oh my
God.
And
I was like, yeah, Rennie the resource. Like, I will be with her.
That's so funny. Rennie the resource, Emily the recruiter.
That's what we need. Like, if we were superheroes, which, you know what, some might argue we are.
Low key.
Probably not. But like, that's what would be on our cape.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Before we get into this episode, I really want to start with a Rennie rated segment. Okay. So For those who don't know, Renny Rated products are the products that I love, that I stan, I'm a stan of, you know? Like, I rep them, and I'm like, you guys should try them too. So what is something that is Renny Rated for you right now?
Okay, I had to put a lot of thought into this. Okay. Like, a lot of thought. And okay. Unfortunately, I have two, and I cannot boil them down.
We love.
I don't have a choice.
The more the merrier.
Okay, the first is a little ridiculous, but I believe strongly that the Lancome Juicy Tube Lip Gloss is the best lip gloss on the market. I would argue she outdoes Fenty. I know. Unless Rihanna's listening.
That's a big claim.
It's a big claim because it lasts forever. Like, I have never had a lip gloss stay on my lips. I guarantee this will not have moved by the end of it.
We're going to hold you to it. Look, watch Lanko, the video if you're not watching it.
Lanko, if you don't sponsor Renny and I by the end of this video, we're going to have a problem.
Honestly, I'm about to send this to Lancome after this.
You know what? We're just going to do a quick little DM. So that lip gloss, I don't know what has possessed me, but over the last month, I can't put it down. Mm-hmm. That, and I have to say, my new bar studio I've been going to in Toronto, mm-hmm. shout out to Bar Bell. Mm-hmm. I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, like, it's what been a is lot of bar? Fun.
Okay, it's
dance or?
Kind of, but like, I can't dance. Okay. So I'm going to say no because I wouldn't be successful at it. It's basically, think Pilates inspired by dance, but you're not dancing. Like, okay. I would argue it's more HIIT Pilates than it is dance. Okay. But there's like a bar and you get to wear cute little leggings.
Okay, interesting.
Next time you're in the city, let me know.
Yeah, I will. We'll go. It sounds fun. And I always love a good class, you know, because it helps to keep me motivated. I feel like working out at home, yeah, I can do it sometimes, but like when you're with people and you're like, basically I'm competitive. Are you competitive?
Okay, not in a healthy way, like in an I'll give up way. Like if I look at someone and she's doing more push-ups and like, good for her, I'm gonna leave.
Oh my, okay.
I give up. Are you more like, oh, I see you and let me do 10
yes,
more?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's
like,
healthy.
Hey, yeah, like, I see this person, they're in the spinning class. Oh, they're spinning faster than me? Let's go.
Turbo speed? Yeah. I'm the opposite. I'm like, you're so healthy, I should give up. I should just stop.
I can't.
So the opposite.
I can't. Okay. Thank you for sharing those two with us.
Oh, no, thank
I love
you.
It. I'm going to try that lip gloss out. I really am. Is there like specific shade or is it universal?
You know what? They're all good.
Okay.
They're all good. Actually, okay. That's not true. There's one that's like milky, which for me, it's. I think it would be really cute if you had super fair skin.
Okay.
Because I feel like that would be a nice little, but I put it on. It looked like I ate powdered donuts.
Okay. We'll avoid that.
Yeah.
Everything else we'll
<We're>
try.
<good. laughs>
Okay. So before we get into this episode, everyone, I just wanted to say that this is not financial advice. This is not career advice. We are giving our takes on it, but you know, we can't say anything that's specific to your personal situation. So make sure you hit up a career coach personally. Emily is a career coach, so you could just hit her up and, you know, get some tips about your specific situation. Okay, Emily, so we always like to start by getting like the behind the scenes and like getting to know the real you. And my favorite way to do this is by learning about where you came from. So could you tell us like where you grew up, what your relationship was like with money, and how it has changed over the years?
Oh my gosh.
No, this is a money podcast. So.
And we love money. One thing about capitalism, we love money.
We do.
We do love money.
We do.
Honestly, this is the first time I've ever been asked that on a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's such a miss for other people not to be asking it on their shows because all of the experience we have is informed by what we've lived. Mm-hmm. I had a really distant and uncomfortable relationship with money. I think when I was growing up, like my parents, first of all, we grew up so open. Like we were Canadian Italian, emphasis on the Canadian. Like we were not old school European at all. We were open with everything. There was no topic off limits. Like my parents would talk about finances in front of my brothers and I, and that was just normal. Like we were always open about it.
Yeah.
So money was never taboo, but I think because my parents were so open about it, I grew up thinking they're just going to take care of this.
Okay.
Like when it came time for me to start saving for university, it was them who sat me down and they're like, you cannot afford to go to school right now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are you saying?
What does that mean?
You're not just going to like a trust fund or something? Yeah. Like you didn't miss some documentation?
Yeah.
No, they did not miss documentation. There was no trust fund.
Yeah.
I mean, never too late, but probably not.
Yeah.
And I think because they were so open about finances, like I knew it was important, but I didn't take any initiative because they were so forthright about it. And I really relied on my parents to basically say, this is how much you need to save. This is how much debt you're going to be in when you graduate. There were so many things I took no initiative on, which is so unlike me. I'm so type A on it with everything. But with finances, I think I fell back because I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And that was really debilitating as I started to make money and then have to balance life and, you know, when can I buy a home? When can I pay off my debts? And it became really, really stressful. So it probably wasn't until like my third or fourth year of university and when I was just starting to think about working full time that I sat down with my dad and was like, I need a crash course because I don't understand how to do anything. And I hate that my financial freedom is in your hands.
Yeah.
And like, I trust the man, love the man. Shout out to my dad. But like,
shout out dad.
As a grown independent person, like I had no knowledge on how to manage it myself. So I would say now I feel so much more educated. Like I'm able to have conversations about money. But when I was 16, I just thought it was going to figure itself out. And if my parents didn't kick me in the butt to do that, I would not have been able to figure it out.
Wow. Okay. That's good. Thank you for being so open and vulnerable about that. Because as you said, it really informs everything else that we do, right? Like the way that you grow up with money informs, it touches every single part of your life, especially your career. Like even if you like don't talk, for example, people are really closed off about money. They never ask for more money in like when they're negotiating their salary, for example, because they don't think they can or they're very just uncomfortable with money. So thank you for sharing that. Could you tell us a little bit about your career journey as well? So you said you like when you started to think about getting your first full-time job, you started to, you know, think about money. What was your career journey like? What did you study in university? And then how did you, when you graduated, what did you do?
Yeah, my career was an accident, like 1,000% an accident. I actually applied to York, gosh, like whenever it was, grade 12, whenever you apply for theater. And I was like, I'm going to be an actress. I told my nonna, my little Italian grandmother, that woman cried for weeks. Because in old European culture, they're like, what do you mean? You're never going to work again. Yeah. Like, you're going to be on the streets. Like, my nonna thought that was it. Like, there it is. Her granddaughter, gone. Never going to work again. And I was so passionate about it. I did. I'm not kidding. Rennie 2 days of classes and was like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah. And there was no particular thing that was wrong about it, but something didn't feel right. And then ironically, I switched into finance and I really, really liked it. But I was like, I don't think the career paths that are going to, you know, organically come from this degree are going to make me happy. And I was like, well, I'll just go into HR. I like people. Ended up graduating with my master's. Wrong. Bachelor's only. We'll never go back to school. I'm like, you could not pay me enough to go back. But I graduated with my degree in HR and I realized like, okay, wait, I'm really, really passionate about this. And I was kind of exploring what the different career paths looked like. I was toying around with the idea of employment law. I was really passionate about that. And then I really enjoyed like the compensation, the finance, how do people feel motivated and like they're earning at work. And then I got an internship opportunity at BMO that was in HR. It was in learning and design. And I actually really liked that internship, but I knew that wasn't my forever career path. I just, frankly, I don't have the design eye for that to be a space that I'd be successful in. But I actually got approached by someone who worked there about coming on as a like contractor for their recruiting team. And I was like, oh, recruiting.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. That just sounds like sales. Yeah. And it definitely was a lot like sales, but I was 19, needed a job and was like, sign me up. I start Monday. And I've never left recruiting.
Wow.
So I just fell in love with it. So many things I would say after the point of figuring out what I loved were strategic. Finding what I loved was completely just a chain of right place, right time accidents.
Love it.
So yeah, and then I've been a senior recruiter at Intuit, which is the company that makes and owns MailChimp, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, TurboTax. And I do a lot of different recruiting, but mostly tech and sales, which is so fun. And then of course, content. I suppose on the side, but they're like 50-50. So
very
it's been
cool.
Fun.
So you started making content. Was it in 2020 that you started making content as well?
It was the week of the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
I was like, you know what? I've got nothing to do.
Oh, wow.
I'm just going to make
the fact
a little
that you
video.
Started the week of for me.
It was literally like the Tuesday of the pandy. And I was like, should I make a little video?
Yeah, we're at home anyways.
We're at home. I was living at home at the time. And I was like, you know what? This is the exact same week I did the little podcast, couple of episodes. Those did well. And then I started with Instagram because that's right when Reels came out too.
Oh, okay.
I was like, is this a thing?
Yeah.
And then they blew up. And I was like, oh my God, okay, this is a thing.
Yeah, I remember people like, I think someone, I don't know if someone tagged me in your video or something. I was like, I know this girl.
I met her.
And just for context, everyone, I know I mentioned it briefly at the beginning, but we worked at BMO together. So I did an internship as a business analyst at BMO. She was working in HR at BMO as an intern as well. And we met each other. But like, we literally didn't, like I think we had like a, was it a hackathon or something? Like something. One day of like orientation or something.
I couldn't even, if you were to pay me, I don't even think I remember.
Like I don't remember, but we connected on LinkedIn probably that day. Yeah. And then ever since then, we've like known of each other. But yeah, so that's really cool.
Oh, go ahead. I was gonna say the content brought us back together. Yeah, I remember we like found each other's pages and it was like, yeah. Oh my God, you do this too.
So I think it was like someone who we worked with as well, Natalie. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. I think
yes.
Natalie like tagged me in your video or something, and she was like, "Oh, like you're doing cool. You're both doing cool things or something." Like
yes.
That.
Oh my gosh, Natalie. Like, shout out to you.
Yeah. Shout out to Natalie. I was like, "Oh my God, I know her." So yeah, very very small world, very full circle.
In the best way. Yeah.
Did you always see yourself working at a bank? Well, I guess not, because you. Your career was, your choice was kind of an accident, right?
Yeah. So, you know what though? I think I didn't pay a lot of attention to what the kinds of companies I was going to work at would look like. Okay. I paid a lot of attention to the kinds of jobs because in my head, I was like, there's no way I'm going to have the perfect intersection of creativity and public speaking and events with the things that I love, which is like the data and analytics. How do we build strategy around numbers? And it wasn't until I started at the bank that I realized there's actually so much opportunity create the job and the life that you want.
Yeah.
So once I was in the bank, I had a really hard time believing I'd ever leave the bank.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I was bleeding blue at really? BMO. I was like, I'm gonna stay here forever. You know what, I for the first couple of years and then after a little bit I was in the same boat where I was like, I need to get out of here.
From the beginning I was kind of like, this is cool. I had the same thought. I was like, oh, there's so many opportunities here. Like, I had no idea, and people do so many cool things within the bank. Like, there's some boring teams, don't get me wrong, but there's some, like,
I would say there's probably at least 60%
boring, boring, but like there's some like really cool sick teams at the bank. So that was my first, when I was there I was like, oh, like it opened my mind to like the opportunities.
I thought careers were so black and white. Yeah. Like, you're a recruiter, that means you find people and you do this, but then I was like, oh my gosh, there are entire teams dedicated to working on AI to enable things like recruiting and enable learning. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah.
So I think I had a really hard time thinking I would leave, because the second I got in, and a lot of big companies are like this, where they try to almost brainwash you to be like, this is the best place you've ever worked. Like, tell me you love me.
Yeah.
And it was so easy to get wrapped up in the culture and, to be honest, like the office politics, and think this is where the world stops and starts. Yeah. So it took a while, and it probably wasn't until my last year and a half where I was like, is there something else out here?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to be waking up feeling this stressed and getting paid this little.
Relatable.
I was like, I'm not getting paid to be this anxious.
Yeah. And
this
then
is not worth it.
How did you make your transition into tech? Like, was it like how did you even know that this job, this new job as a tech recruiter existed? Or, or was it campus recruiting that you first did?
So it still was campus. So when I was at BMO, I spent the entire like portion of my career there in campus recruiting, which is like interns, co-ops, early careers. And what's cool about campus is that it's really a mixture of events and recruiting. Like, it's that cool intersection.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to stay in campus, and I knew I needed to get into tech. Like, this was the height of the tech boom. Everyone was saying, this is where you grow. And I was like, this is what I want. So there were a couple of companies that were on my radar, and to be honest, Intuit was not one of them.
Okay.
I assumed they'd be more of like an old school tax company, because I heard TurboTax and I was like, taxes, I don't want to talk about that. But I saw they posted a role to lead their Canadian recruitment function, and I was like, tell me more.
I could do that.
I'll apply. So I threw in my application. I was not sold. I was not overly excited. I was applying and interviewing like a zillion other places. And the recruiter called me, and the conversation I had with this woman, I was like, I need to work with her.
Aww.
She was amazing. Like, you could just tell when someone loves what they do.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're really good. And everyone I spoke to for the rest of the process, I left with the same feeling. And to be honest, even staying here, like, I've been at Intuit now for 4 and a bit years, and even my boss asked me, he's like, so when are you going to quit? He's like, at some point you're going to do content full time. And I was like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Like, the people here, if I worked anywhere else, I'd be gone. But the people are so fantastic that like I had to get in. But the transition was honestly teaching myself the engineering side of things. Not that I can code, but like getting the language, understanding how does recruiting differ like tech versus other industries, so that I showed up properly to those interviews. And dude, like, best decision I've ever made,
I
so
love
good.
I always love when people pivot their careers, you know, because although you're still in recruiting, of course, but like moving from financial services to tech is definitely a big change. And you had to learn like stuff about coding, and it sounds complicated
to
me. But I know a lot of people are like, oh, I started in this lane. Like, I don't really want to pivot. So I'm glad that you did, because
you have to pivot. Yeah. Like, I hate when I, like, not that I hate, but it breaks my heart when I hear people say, like, oh, well, I'm in my late 30s. What am I going to do? Change my career?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, babes.
You are. Isn't that exciting that you're going to change your career? Like, right? Your life is completely how you design it. And if you're happy with the design, great. If you're not, you are the only person stopping you from making the change to make you happy.
Word.
You should put that on a shirt. The pivot is, I mean, same goes for you. Like, you went from stability of a traditional 9 to 5, even though you were working way more than
9 to 10.
9 to 10. Just a cheeky 9 to 9 at minimum. Yeah. To entrepreneurship. Like, that's so many people don't, like, we were even talking about this before we were recording, where it's like everyone has such a limited worldview until you're in it and you realize, like, wait a second. I can do literally anything, as corny as it is.
You know what really changed my mind? It was when I started to, like, travel a lot, and I started to meet people from around the world who are, like, doing cool things just from their laptop, like, and then they're making so much money every month. I was like, oh, like, we don't have to have, like, I don't have to work at a bank for the rest of my life and make, like, 70K or 80K. Like, I don't have to do this.
Try $43,000 a year.
Is that what you were making?
Oh, girl, yeah. My very first job offer, I'll put them on blast. I made $43,000 a year in my first job.
Like, when you graduated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when I asked for a raise, they said, maybe next year. And there was no raise the next year. And I literally was living at home, and I was like, I'll die in this basement.
Oh my God.
I was like, is that not crazy?
Yeah, so the move to tech made a lot of sense for you, I'm sure.
I had to. I would have never been able to move out had I not taken that job and into it.
Oh my goodness. Well, shout out to Intuit for real. Intuit, you don't want to sponsor the podcast. I'm here. Oh. You know, TurboTax, QuickBooks, you know, right?
MailChimp?
Right? I actually use MailChimp.
Actually, let's talk about this offline. Okay. Because I know... You should be working with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Into it. We'll talk.
Okay. So, Emily, today I really want to talk to you about career growth strategies and how growing our careers can help us get to, you know, the big bag and get some more money in our pockets. And so let's start off with talking about searching for jobs. The reality is that some jobs do pay better than others. For example, working in tech may pay better than working in the financial services industry or being in education, because I know, you know, our teachers don't get paid very well. So what are some industries that you think people should consider if they want to make more money? Like, what are some of the big paying industries that you know of right now?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Like, if you want to make more money in your career, I would say before you even think about the industry, expand your mind on the kinds of jobs that you're going for. Because in my head, when I first started my career, I loved recruiting, but I really thought I was going to land in, like, recruitment programs, which is like, think of onboarding, think of the learning side, even the compensation side. That stuff makes less money. And it wasn't until I started working where I was like, oh, wait a second, I'm going to get capped out at $80,000 a year if I work at a bank, even if I get to a manager level in that job. So really be strategic about the kinds of roles you think you could be great at and expand what that looks like, because even if you're in the same like type of work, the positions themselves might vary. Mm. But industry-wise, get out of government. Quit your government job. You're never going to be able to I shouldn't say never. It's going to be a lot harder for you to out-earn your peers in other industries when you're in a heavily regulated, heavily watched industry. Mm. I'd say same would go for areas like banking, although not always. There are a lot of functions in the bank that have 1,000 different people doing the same job, and the compensation reflects that. If you're really, really excited about the work that you do, look into tech, like, and don't limit yourself and think that means Facebook or that means Google.
Yeah.
There are so many tech companies, especially that are internationally hiring, where you can work remotely, where it's things you've never heard of. Like, there are massive teams who earn fantastic incomes and have, like, really fulfilled careers working on a tech payroll product for the company I work for. I would have never thought that payroll is tech. It is. So just really having, like, a big mind, but anything that's going to be AI and ML driven, that's what's where the ML? Money's going to be. Oh, machine learning.
Okay.
So I would say anything that's going to be, like, deep in the future of tech, which we know is based in artificial intelligence, go for companies that are investing there and invest in yourself in those skills, because banks are great, but if they don't flex. Or even in consulting, you're starting to see like the KPMGs and the Deloittes, they're really starting to flex how they hire. So it's tech first, consulting second, which is bananas and brilliant. So like those spaces that are deepening their investment in tech, that's where you want to be.
Okay, good advice. I think like even if you do something, you can look at how you can do that same thing within tech, right? It's not like you have to choose a completely new career path. It's just like what I'm doing right now, maybe I can apply this to a tech company.
Yeah, and thinking bigger than the 9-to-5 like office grind, there are so many people I know who are working for companies that aren't in Canada while they are physically in Canada. Mm. They're working remote and they're getting paid some pretty sexy US salaries.
US dollars.
So it's USC, because even if they hire us at a premium in Toronto, because it's an expensive city to live in, as we know, it's still cheaper than the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So they're enthused to give you that little raise. Okay. So just think big about where you apply. It doesn't need to be a GTA specific job or like a Vancouver specific job for it to work out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good advice. Thank you. So now that we know that we can pivot into some different industries, many people still have that thing where they believe that they are limited to what they studied in school, right? So I studied accounting and I have to be an accountant for the rest of my life. Or I worked in accounting before, so now I have to, you know, continue accounting in whatever field that I go into. So do you have any advice for someone who feels like this? Like they may want to find a new job in a new field, but they feel scared. How would they actually make that change into this new field?
Yeah, it's a really scary thing. Like change generally is scary, but realizing that you've invested all of this time and money into something that maybe doesn't excite you anymore, like that's a big thing to adjust to. What I will say is, do you think that, let's say I studied human resources, which I did. I studied HR. I go into my first day of work. There still were 4 or 5 months of hardcore training and picking things up on the job before I could say I'm an expert at this. Even today, I'm still learning things. So regardless of what your degree is set in, you still need to learn things on the job. I doubt your accounting degree would equip you to show up to Deloitte day one as an audit specialist and you know everything.
Yeah.
There's no way. So this mindset that academics or having this diploma or degree suddenly makes you qualified and makes you intelligent is really dated.
Yes.
And I also think good companies are starting to see that access to education is a privilege. And when most folks are going to a 4-year university degree, they're leaving with at least $50,000 of debt. And for some people, that's not an option. For most people, that's not an option. So you're starting to see companies, again, I'm plugging tech because I am biased and have worked in tech, but tech is one of the first industries adopting a, we don't care where you learned it, we care you can do it mindset. Mm-hmm. So think of companies that have that kind of shift. But when it comes to actually making the transition from one industry to another, look at what skills you have and build the skills you don't. The skills that you learned in your degree, the skills you learned in your previous job, those are things that are sticking with you. Like your ability to deal with difficult people, it's coming with you. Like she's in the luggage. Maybe you aren't as equipped to, I don't know, build out presentation decks in a way that matters for consultants. That's fine. Do a quick LinkedIn learning course. Yeah. Go on YouTube. Call it a day. Companies that are worth working at don't care about the piece of paper. They care you can do it. My vote is avoid going back to school. With your library card, you get free access to Lynda, which is LinkedIn Learning's platform. Mm. Take a peek at that. You can go on YouTube. There's so much self-directed learning and sell that on your resume.
Yeah.
Any company who cares about a piece of paper, I'm telling you right now, is pretentious. You don't want to work there. Yeah. Like that place is dated. That place probably doesn't even have Casual Friday. So like, we're done.
Facts. Good. Okay. So but how do they actually find these jobs? So yeah, now we're like, okay, I'm ready. I listened to Emily. I'm ready to apply. But how do we find these jobs? Like, where are we looking? Are there job boards? Is it in person? Like, what's the best way to find, like, to pivot into these new jobs?
Yeah. So once you have kind of, actually, I would even take it a step back. And when you're thinking about what jobs you want to apply to with a transition, go on job boards, like go on Indeed or LinkedIn, look up jobs that have that title and see what skills they're asking for and see what you bring to the table and see what you don't. Because the first thing you need to do is close the skills gaps and highlight the things that you already shine in. Mm. So once you get a sense of, okay, like I know I could do this job, I just need to figure out how to get in. I hate to say it, but applying for positions online, it's never going to be enough. It's not enough.
Did we hear that?
So sorry.
I always tell people this and they're like, they just continue. Yeah. And I'm like, I get it, but I've never gotten a job by just applying for it, you know?
Listen, it's not like I'm saying it's right. If I could single-handedly change the way we work, I would. but we have to play the game.
Yeah.
Like, this is the game. The game is, if you just apply online, you are one of 1,000 applicants.
Yeah.
Minimum. So how are you going to stand out? I don't care how beautiful your resume is. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to read it. I'm saying I, not like me. I read them. But we have to remember, when there's high volumes of applicants, recruiters tend to manually read through all of them, and chances are important information is getting missed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can apply online. But if you're going to do that, reach out to the recruiter, or even better, the person who's currently in that job, like on LinkedIn, hunt them down, get creepy with it. Like, pretend you're going on a Hinge date and you need to figure out if this man is still married.
Yeah.
That's the level of rigor I want you to bring to this LinkedIn search. Mm-hmm. And then message them and say, hey, I just applied for this business analyst role. I'm super excited about it. Wanted to flag my application. If you've got 10 minutes, I'd love to chat.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Even if they don't respond, it's going to trigger a memory of your name as they're reviewing.
Yeah.
But we also know 80% of jobs are filled by referral. And mentorship sucks. Nobody likes mentorship. I feel so awkward when I'm, you know, meeting someone once a month and asking how I can develop, or asking how I can do this, that, or the other thing. But mentorship is probably the best way to have someone advocating for you in rooms you're not in, and bringing you jobs that haven't even been posted yet. So go crazy on both of those, and be patient, because it takes on average 6 months to land your dream gig.
Ooh, 6 months.
It is. Yeah. It is. And especially in this economy, it's going to be a good six, my friends.
Oh no.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
We love you.
So should they be doing a combination of, like, still applying online, but then, you know, doing the flagging and everything that you said? I think it's a really good tip. And Emily just, she gave you a script on how you can message it, because something I see often, especially when I was working in corporate, I would get messages from people and they're like, hey, I applied for this job. Can you put my name for it? And I'm like, hello? Do I?
What happened to hello? How are you?
Like,
yeah.
How are, how am I? Like, I'm shocked. I'm appalled. Like,
I don't know you. Also, the referrals thing.
Can you refer
me
for
this? Oh, madon.
Yeah. So I think it's all about, like, your approach. Okay, guys. Like, we can't just be talking to people all crazy thinking that they're going to. I don't know you. Like, think about that. I don't know you. I can't just put your name forward. This is my name on the line now that I'm putting your name forward.
That's what people miss. I've had so many people say, well, you're going to get a referral bonus if you send my name in and I get hired. Or if you get into the interview and you are so unbelievably bad, everyone is going to think that you are the bar of talent that I accept. Mm. And that's not going to work. So I will say, though, side note on the, if you really want a referral and it's a role that's really competitive or a company that's really competitive, go to Fishbowl. Not sponsored, but it should be. Go to fishbowl.com and go to the company's website page. They call it, like, the bowl for your company that you're applying to.
Okay.
And type in there, I'm looking for someone to refer me.
Oh.
And people will do it.
Really?
Easily. Like this, because they just want the money. Okay. So, and you know what? I don't question them. Go for it. Pay them $50 for a referral. Get them to refer you. Automatically, your resume is getting reviewed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So if you're, like, desperate for this specific job and you are in love with it and you want it, it's also an option.
Yeah. And $50 is a small price to pay for, like,
I mean, as long as you get the job. If you don't get the job, then it's awkward.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It is what it is. Yeah.
It's an investment. Write it off in your taxes. Just kidding. Don't do that.
I love it. I love
TurboTax TurboTax listening, like, stop.
Well, please stop.
Please stop.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you for that as well. You're giving gems. And everyone, Emily has literally all of this on her Instagram page, on her TikTok, on her podcast. So, like, again, I think I'll plug her like 10 times doing this, but please go on her page and follow, because she literally has the scripts out there for you.
We love, like, the hacks.
It's so easy. And also there's Google. Google is free as well. I always tell people this.
Google is free. Yeah. And you know what? I think sometimes people forget that.
They do.
There are literally robots on the internet you can access for free who can write your emails. ChatGPT will literally help you prepare for an interview.
People message me and they're like, hey, Rennie, I'm waiting for you to make this video about this topic so that I can make a decision. I'm like, you know, everything I say is Googleable.
Like, yeah, like, this, it's wonderful knowledge. But if you've got a 72-hour timeline, baby, I'm going to need you to hit the internet. I really am.
I'm always, like, shocked. I'm like, guys.
I love the faith.
Guys.
I love the commitment.
I know. I'm like, I know that you love me, but come on. Google is so free.
It's so but even, I think it's the same for interviews, too. Like, I've had people, especially when I was in banking, like, what's this job for again? I'm like,
oh my God.
You could always check the job site where you applied. Please don't ask me. It's worse now that you're asking
me. Oh my God.
Like, I wish I didn't know you had this question.
My goodness. Okay. So now that we found the job on this job board. Okay. We've applied. We've gotten an interview. How can we stand out in an interview? What are the tips that you have to stand out in an interview?
Oh my gosh. If you are getting into an interview, there are three main things.
Okay.
Like, there's always three. Number one, I don't care if dressed to impress is old, dated advice. It's true. You need to show up. You don't need to dress for the job you want even. Just show up looking professional for the setting.
Yeah.
Like if you are in tech, don't show up in a suit.
Yeah.
That's going to be weird.
Good tip.
Yeah. Like if you are in finance, you're going to need to show up in a suit. You don't need to be overdressed, but just be mindful about the company that you are applying for because most first impressions are made within a tenth of a second. Mm. You can't say anything in that time. And it's all about how we look in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of ugly, biased, not good things that come with that. The only thing that's in our control is making sure we show up aligned to our brand. Like, I'll never show up in an all black outfit to an interview.
Because not
ever.
You.
Cause it's not me.
Yeah.
That's not who I am. Like, you're getting personality.
And even purple.
Purple. It's literally, we are showing up like Barney.
Yeah.
And if they don't respect it, leave me
it
be.
It is what it is.
So number one, show up aligned to your brand. Number two is you have to do research. Mm-hmm. There is no excuse. Google is free. I'm not talking about, you know, the basic stuff like, oh, I want to work at Google because you're Google. That's not good enough.
No.
You want to go on the company's website, and even if you don't mean it, just lie, okay? Mm-hmm. If you've lied about other things, just lie. Go on their company website and look up what values they share are the most important to them. Mm. And if something authentically resonates with you, I know when I interviewed at Intuit, I did this, and I saw that every single year Intuit posts publicly if there are any salary discrepancies between women and men, and then how is that different for white women versus black women? What were promotion rates between different groups at the company? And when they identify discrepancies, they have a commitment, it's fixed. I was like, I had goosebumps. I was like, this is the only way change happens. I was like, I'm in. So I brought that up in the interview, and they were so impressed that I did that research.
Yeah.
So something like that, find something that resonates to what's important to you and call that out. The other thing is that third portion, you need to be prepared to sell because interviews are sales pitches. Mm-hmm. It is not the time to be humble. Mm-hmm. It is not the time to say things like, well, you know, my team was able to accomplish this because all of us did this, because all of us did that.
No.
That might be true, but I need to hear what you did.
Talk your shit.
Yeah. Like, hype yourself up. As a recruiter, I want to hear you tell me where you shine, what makes you special. I want to see you succeed. Mm-hmm. So going in knowing how to sell really starts with having a good intro. How are you introducing yourself? It needs to be a minute. It needs to be concise, and it needs to tell me why you're different. Mm-hmm. You need to ask questions that show me, yes, you did your research, but put some pressure on me. Like, make me work. You know, I'm thinking as a hiring manager, it's like when you're on a date and the person's like, oh my God, you're amazing. When's the second date? It's like, whoa, slow down.
Chill.
Chill, babe, chill. Chill, please stop. Yeah. You don't even know me like that.
Yeah.
They want you to put some pressure on, ask thoughtful questions. How are you planning on future-proofing yourself against your competitors? Where do you see this role growing in 2 years? Like, don't be scared to ask those questions.
Yeah.
And most importantly, you need to adopt improv thinking. Like, when you're in an interview and it's your goal to sell your experience, you need to be equipped to answer questions on the spot and have like an improv mindset where
yes and
nothing is no. If you don't know the answer, it's okay to say, I don't know it, but here's how I'm going to get there. So thinking on your feet, and then of course, communication skills are always important. So
practice,
literally record yourself answering interview questions.
I used to do that before.
That's brilliant.
And I actually got really good at interviews. Like, after, like, I think it was when I was trying to pivot into marketing from being a business analyst, I literally just started, like, you know, going for a lot of interviews. I didn't get a lot of them at first, and I was like, why am I getting them? So I would I would start practicing and be like, oh, that's why I wasn't getting them, you know, because my answers are trash. Like, so
that's amazing.
It would help me do better. And then after every interview, I would write down all the questions, like, try to recall all the questions, write them down so I wouldn't forget them, and then answer them again, like, so that I could practice for the next interview, right?
That's brilliant.
And I honestly, I think I'm an amazing interviewer.
I believe it.
I haven't interviewed in years now, so I don't know, but I did well.
You know what? You would be a good interviewer. Yeah. I'm not concerned, but it's true. Like, recording yourself, going back, and it's the second you realize that recruiters want to see you do well, take that pressure off.
This is the key because, they're trying to find the good candidate too, right?
There's nothing a recruiter wants more than for me to say, oh, I don't need to work on this role anymore.
Like, I found my person, right?
Yeah, like, it makes us look good. It makes you look good. Yeah. We want to see you succeed. Like, that is the whole purpose of our job, is to place amazing people into exciting roles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say my biggest thing was recording myself too, because I, in my head, I was like, I'm confident and I'm clear. It's like, no. You are no such thing.
0 out of 10.
You are embarrassing.
Yeah. I know. Sometimes I'd hear myself and I'm like, oh my God, that was really bad.
And I really thought I was doing something. Yeah, I was like, I thought I introduced myself like I was walking the red carpet.
And it was not.
It was giving drunk on a first date. Like, it was not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
What about after the interview? Is there anything that you suggest that people do like to stand out from all the other interviewers? What am I, interviewees?
Interviewees. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I was like, I had to think about that. Yeah. There's a few things. Okay. Number one, it's classic, but send a thank you message. Please. It makes a difference.
Even to your mentors as well. Send thank you messages after your
interview. Anyone messages. Who helped you get that interview, it takes nothing. It's a 4-sentence message. It's not that deep.
It's not.
You can really just say like, thank you so much. Was really excited for the opportunity. I look forward to any feedback. That's it. Add them all on LinkedIn. That's more so just so you can stay in touch, but also psychology hack. If they're interviewing 30 people, they're going to remember your name popping up in their email notifications.
And especially if you do post on LinkedIn, like maybe during, maybe they're interviewing people and you're posting on LinkedIn, say you're posting like some of your accomplishments at work during this time, it's like you're top of mind for them, right? It's like, oh, Renny's posting about this is what she's doing. She's, her ratings are going up in my book, right?
Yes. And I think this is where it comes back to, like, it's sales. Yeah. How we market ourselves is sales. Like, Coca-Cola would not be as well known if there weren't fantastic ads that flooded the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You might be drinking Pepsi instead if you have no taste, because obviously Coke tastes way better. But it's the same with us. Your personal brand extends everywhere. It's how you email. It's how you show up on LinkedIn. Are you a content creator? Is that relevant to your field? If the answer is yes, put that on your resume. Yes. So keep showing up authentically. And that's why it's so important to be thoughtful about the kinds of jobs that you want. Because once you're in a space where you're like, okay, no, this is what I love to do, you can create a brand for yourself that's going to have impact even when the interview's done. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where the magic happens.
Yes. Okay, so let's say we followed all your tips. We got the job, okay? And now we have an offer from a company. How do we approach salary negotiation? This is a big part, you know, about money and building your career. So how do we approach salary negotiation? Are we just supposed to accept that first salary? Or what should we be, like, how do we know what to ask for? How does it work?
Yeah, great question. Let me ask you this. Would you say yes to the first person who proposed to you on your first date ever?
Ooh, good question.
If the answer was yes, go to therapy. if the answer is no, keep that mindset. That's what we're doing. Your career is so personal. We spend hours. I think this stat was almost 60% of our life is spent at the office. So the first thing you need to be real with yourself on is, am I going to like this job enough that I'm not going to go crazy? You don't need to love it. It's just work. But if that's feeling good and it's time to think about money, the first thing I would do is educate yourself on what compensation splits look like, because your salary is not always the most important thing. Sometimes you got an opportunity where the salary might be lower than you expected, but your total earnings are higher. So you need to ask the recruiter, how do stocks play into this? Do you award me stocks at the end of the year? What does year-end cash bonus look like? And how variable is it based on the economy? Because some of these companies say 30,000 cash bonus. Yeah. But it was a tough year.
Yeah.
I can't pay you. Yeah. And then your cash bonus doesn't exist. Mm. So really take a look at what the holistic picture is. And then you're going to go on Payscale. Glassdoor is okay for this. It's not my favorite. I would say go to Payscale. And you're going to type in all of the information that it asks for. And it basically gives you a robust analysis of what that job title in your city should be getting paid.
Okay.
And that's your starting point for data. It's never going to be perfect. So take it with a grain of salt. But if you're $30,000 under, we've got a problem. Yes. Like, that's pretty legitimate. Go on Reddit, go on Fishbowl, see what other people are getting paid, because people talk about this.
Yes.
If you've determined the money's not looking right, or it's less than what you need to feel valued in this job, first thing you're going to do, email the recruiter. You never negotiate in writing, ever, under any circumstances. And what I will say about Canadian employment law is two things that are important to know. A verbal offer is a legally binding offer. So if you're on the phone and they go, no problem, we're going to make your offer 200K. Fantastic. That's legally binding.
Okay.
Hold them to it. The second thing is, even if they put something in an email that says, yes, we're going to offer this, that doesn't count as your written offer. Get everything in writing in a document and make sure you write down what they say to you on the phone. Not because we want to screw them over, but you need to protect yourself.
Yeah.
So first thing you're going to do, send an email that basically says, thanks for the offer. It's been an awesome experience. Couple of questions. Can we hop on the phone? They're obviously going to say yes. And you're going to come in and literally just say this. Thank you so much. It's been an awesome experience. I'm really excited to move forward. Based on my research and now having a better understanding of the role after I've interviewed, I was looking for a salary range closer to this. What can we do to meet somewhere that makes us both happy? And then enough talking. Let them do the work.
Yeah.
Because I get people all the time who start to negotiate and they're like, because I did good on the interview and I'm very smart and I'm a hard worker. And I'm like, stop. I already know you're amazing.
Yeah.
That's why I want to hire you. Yes. Yeah. And you're, again, like it comes back to the psychology of devaluing yourself. Mm-hmm. You might need to beg for this job in your head. And I felt that too, where it's like, I need this job or like, we're going to have issues. But you need to not act like that's where your head is at. Like you need to make them sweat and make them work and make them think you have options.
Yeah, you are the prize, honestly, in this situation. Like
you are.
Honestly, can a company really pay you enough for the true value that you add to them? Probably not.
No. And so. Also, if you're the kind of person who's thinking about how to negotiate the right way, you're probably the kind of person who is going to work some extra hours.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to carry home some stress when things don't work out when maybe you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. So you should never feel guilty asking for more. It's the recruiter's job. So don't feel bad asking. And also, at the end of the day, you're being paid for a service.
Yes.
Price yourself accordingly. So after that call, you stop talking. You let the recruiter tell you what the next steps are. You let them work their magic. We're basically the conveyors of a message. Like, I don't decide how much someone gets paid, but I'm negotiating on your behalf internally. So let them do that. Let them come back to you. And you need to have a dollar price in your head. That's your walk away point. Because once you negotiate once, you might have tiny tweaks to make after that.
But
if you ask for 40K and they come back with a 10K bump, that's $30,000 left on the table for you.
Yeah.
And for you, you might say, you know what, this opportunity is worth it. I'm okay with it. And that's totally cool. Not every move is a money move. Yeah. But if it's not feeling right, you have to give yourself permission to say on to the next, like, it's okay. This is not the one.
What if they come to me and they say, I'm paid like 90,000 right now. I get a job offer and they're saying it's 150K. And I'm like, obviously over the moon because, you know, it's 150K. Should I just accept it? Or what's my move from there?
Oh, I'm going to be so transparent. That's what happened to me at Intuit.
Okay.
I didn't negotiate my salary because I opened up that job offer and was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I responded to the recruiter and asked if there was a mistake. And I'm not even joking. That's so embarrassing. But I was like, I think there might be an error.
Like,
this is looking a little too fair.
Yeah.
Like, I can afford to eat now.
Yeah.
And because also like the pay at the bank was not great for what I did. And I was just floored. I was like, oh my God, like I know I can bring this value. And I didn't negotiate and I regret it because they are telling you what they think your value is. And if every company has a different salary range, they probably had budget for me to ask, even if it was for another 5K. I will say though, if the company's operating in good faith and they're telling you this is the best we can do, that's okay. Like we're not here to gouge companies. Some companies will legitimately treat you well. And if you're happy with the offer, don't put yourself through the stress for an extra couple of grand. But if every penny counts, which I know, especially at that stage in my life, it really did.
Yeah.
I did myself a disservice by not asking.
Yeah. Same thing happened to me with BMO. I've shared this story a few times, but basically when I got my new grad job, the recruiter called me and they were like, hey, Renny, we're going to offer you $50,000. And I was like, okay, thank you. Like,
see my face?
I was like, thank you. When do I start? Literally, like, I was so excited because I think as an intern, I was getting paid like 38 something. So it was like, it was nothing, right?
Yeah.
So 50 was a huge bump. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And she was like, oh, okay. Like, that was literally her response. And then she was like, she hung up. And I was like, okay, that was weird.
I got finessed.
No, I didn't even, I was just like, that was a weird response, but sure, whatever. And then she called me back a few days later. She's like, hey, Renny, so we found some room in the budget and we can actually offer you $53,000. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I was like, thank you.
Love this place.
Like, I was so happy. Like, I was like, oh, this is the best company ever. Like, they offer me more money. My parents were like, what company offers people more money like that? Like, that's kind of, And then when I started working there, I found out that they actually had, like, the lowest part of the salary band in the tech part of the bank that I was at, that 53K was the lowest they were actually allowed to offer me. So she was offering me 50, expecting me to negotiate, and then I would get up to 53.
But that's what they do.
Yeah.
Recruiters will lowball, not me.
Yeah.
I'm one of the good ones. Yes. But also I work at a company where if I was legit, if I were to send out an offer on the lowest level, my manager would reach out to me and would be like, can you justify this? Like, is this person's first time doing this job? Is it like, I need justification. Cause it's not ethical.
Yeah.
But you have to go into every offer assuming they're trying to screw you over.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not. let them prove that.
Yeah.
Because they will try to reduce the budget, because in a recruiter's head, how we prove value is by finding great people fast and saving the business money. Mm. And that's how a lot of people take that on really seriously. Opposite end of the spectrum, though, is if you're working with a recruiter who works at an agency, they're going to make commission. So they want you to negotiate
like
crazy.
Please explain how that works for us.
Oh, it's so bananas. And I truly could never work an agency. I think I'd hate it. But there's two different kinds of recruiting. One is in-house, which is what I do. I work at a company. I work for Intuit. I recruit for Intuit. That is it. If I worked in an agency setting, it's similar to any other agency split where I would have maybe 50 different clients, maybe one of them is Intuit. And I would hire people for that company and place them. But every single time I place someone, I make commission. So it's basically sales, mm-hmm. Which is awesome. It's super lucrative. It's a very high intensity field. It's just much more transactional, I would say, than in-house recruiting. But those recruiters, they would not let you accept the offer on first. They're going to go back and say, try adding 50, because that's how they eat. So you have to just be thoughtful about, you know, the circumstances, and you have to trust your gut. Like, I've worked with some recruiters where they've said they're giving me the best offer, and I was like, something in my gut tells me no. The recruiter I worked with at Intuit, she was so transparent with everything. I was like, I don't feel like I'm being taken advantage of with this offer. I still should have negotiated, no harm, but I in my gut, and I will say, like, that gut call was right, because I've never felt screwed over here.
A question I always get is, okay, like, I want to negotiate, but I'm scared that they'll rescind the offer. And my thought is, okay, if they're going to rescind the offer because you asked for a bit more money, then they probably were not the best company, you know? But what is your take on it as a recruiter?
That's it.
Yeah.
There's the take.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine a company ever, first of all, policy-wise, letting that happen. Legally, I don't understand how that works out. That's also not legal, fun fact.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not going to take them to court, so it's fine. I think you're dodging a bullet. If you're scared to negotiate because you're scared, that's fine. Be scared, do it anyways. That's totally fair. Mm-hmm. If they come back to you and say, well, now that you've asked for $10,000, you're greedy. We're going to take the offer away. Mm-hmm. You were about to sign an offer with the devil. You were about to work at a company that was going to take advantage of you forever.
Yeah.
Period. So thank whoever you believe in up there. They were looking out for you.
Yeah. And I know we, like, speak from a place of privilege of being able to be like, yeah, F this company, you know, like, they were going to screw us over, but, like, they were probably going to screw you over.
Yes. And it's so easy to say, like, oh, decline the job offer. Oh, look for another job when you have employment. Like, sometimes we don't have the luxury. Like, I remember my first BMO job, it was that or bust. Like, I knew I wasn't going to be able to find another job easily. I had no experience other than that one internship there. Mm-hmm. But it's not to say – there are cases where you can be picky. And when you have the luxury of being picky, do it, because it sets you up for success. But that's, not to mitigate the fact or, like, wash away the fact that sometimes you're going to take what's going to pay the bills, and that's totally fine.
Totally fine. We're not negating that at all. Okay, so now let's pivot into people who are already in their careers now. So what are some tips you can give someone who is in their career, they have the job, they want to shine and look amazing in their job? What are some tips you have for that?
Okay. Number one, love this question. You have to be really intentional about your personal brand. Mm-hmm. I used to think personal branding was a, like, old school, very dated thing where I was like, what do you mean personal brand? I just show up as myself. You showing up as yourself every day, that's your personal brand, whether you realize it or not. And the scary thing is when you don't realize what your brand is.
Yeah, it's very scary.
It's mighty scary. Because you know those people you work with and you're like, oh my God, their work is really good. They're quite brilliant. You chat with them at lunch and you're like, this person's crazy. I'm looking into the eyes of someone who's, this person's, I don't want to have lunch here. I don't feel safe. Like, you speak with some people and it's like all they do is talk crap about other people. They show up, they're hungover 5 days a week. And then other people you meet and you're like, you are so warm and intelligent and I want to work with you and I feel empowered when I'm around you. Those people are often not aware, and most of us aren't aware of the brand that we're giving off because we're showing up as ourselves. The problem is, in a perfect world, we would show up as our authentic selves at work. We don't live in a perfect world. We live in a world where we need to play a political game in order to get ahead. And how we do that is thinking mindfully about how we show up and making sure that's authentic to us. Like, I'm never going to be a quiet, subdued, not awkward, loud lady. Like, we are who we are. But you need to be intentional about what your brand is so that you can make it a part of how you show up every day in your emails. It's how you speak to other people. Like, I would say the biggest disservice you can do is not be thoughtful about having a pillar. Like, what is the feeling I want someone to walk away with when they work with me? Mm-hmm. And I'm intentional about that, because it's so easy to come in and be like, I don't feel like doing this today. Or like, yeah, I'm in a mood, or so-and-so is pissing me off. And like, I want to talk about it. But if my mantra, or like the vibe, so to speak, I want to give off is I want people to feel safe and empowered when they're around me, doing that isn't aligned to that. So why am I showing up as that person? That's not who I am. That's not how I want others to feel around me. So like showing up and being thoughtful, even with emails, like someone sends you a snippy email. Okay. My natural response is, first of
clap
all, bitch.
Back.
Yeah. Like, yeah, absolutely write a novella like I do in my TikTok comments.
Same.
Yeah. The TikTok comments, I have no values, actually.
Yeah, same.
I don't care.
I know. I'm like, yesterday I posted something and I was like, this does not align with my brand. Like, well, it actually is very me to clap back. But like, I was like, it's not what I'm trying to represent online.
You know what, though? Sometimes a breaking character keeps it refreshing.
It's true.
It does. And some of the saucy comments, I was like, you just caught me on the wrong day.
Yeah.
I am going to respond, Brad, yes. 252. Face reveal. Face reveal, Brad.
Yeah, you caught the right one on the wrong day.
The wrong day. Yeah. Cheers. So yeah, maybe don't do that at work.
Yeah,
but TikTok, no. We support it. But yeah, just like being really mindful and intentional about your brand. Mm-hmm. That's what gets you exposure. And that's ultimately the most important, because it's usually not the smartest people who get promoted. It's the most liked.
Facts.
Period. So
facts.
Be the most liked.
Yes.
Essentially.
It's true. And I know that can be like unfortunate for some people, because they're like, oh, I'm not an extrovert. But I want to say, oh, you can be an introvert and still be extremely likable and still have a great personal brand. Like, it's not just all about being loud and everything. But you're right that the people who are most liked, the people who are easy to work with, the people who, it's just like you want them on your team. Those are people who get promoted. And it's
100%. Yeah. And I think you put it perfectly. That doesn't mean you need to be an extrovert.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to be the loudest or like the most enthusiastic in the room. You just need to be, like you said, easy to work with. And you need to make other people feel good.
Yes.
And like, you don't need to be big and loud and whatever. It can be as simple as when you come into the office, are you saying, I haven't seen you in a couple of days. How are you?
I know. Oh my God.
And that's it.
I had some coworkers who would like come into work, not say hi to anyone, just sit down. And at the end of the day, it's like they would like sneak out so that no one would know. And I'm like, guys, like you're allowed to leave. It's not like anyone, no one's stopping
it's
you.
It's safe.
And if you just say bye, like that would be amazing, you know?
And that's all it takes. Like it's like when you meet someone for the first time, like you meet one of your friend's friends and you're like, oh my God, she was awesome.
Yes.
She was so fun. She was so warm. She wasn't necessarily life of the party, but when you were with her, you felt present.
Yes.
Like you felt like you two were there together. Mm-hmm. Be that person.
Yes.
It's so easy to be that person.
Please be that person, guys. Like I think that the reason I got promoted since 2015, I haven't actually had to like formally apply for any of the jobs I got, because it was all networking, it was all personal branding, and it was all just like people liked me, and then I was able to, you know, move up in my career. So
that's all it takes.
Yeah. Be a good person.
I mean,
nice
you also
person.
Have to be competent.
Yeah. Well,
be smart.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Please.
You are surpassed. But you like, as long as you feel good about the work you're doing and you're hitting what you need to hit, invest in yourself and like invest in your mental health, invest in balance and your wellness, because that's one of the major things that shows up at work.
Yes. I know you mentioned personal branding, and a lot of us hate posting on LinkedIn, right? Like
I hate it.
Personally, I'm fine with it because, you know, I'm a content creator. It's like my full-time thing, but I know a lot of us like think it's so cringe to post on LinkedIn. And also networking, they find it a bit, and all the other fluff that comes with building your career. But do you actually think there's value in doing all of this stuff?
Okay, networking for sure.
Yeah.
Networking, 1,000%, because networking is never not uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Even at this stage in my career, I still get uncomfortable networking. As someone who coaches people on how to network, I'm still like,
yeah,
this. Like yeah. I'm awkward and I don't know what to ask. Networking is worth it, because networking is what opens doors. And even if it doesn't feel like it's opening doors today, it's opening doors tomorrow.
Yeah,
always. Perfect little like anecdote for this. My very first internship, which was unpaid. Love that. My first internship, or I suppose volunteer experience.
Yeah.
I was writing at a like fashion magazine in the city, and my boss was awesome. Like she was great. She and I stayed in contact. I felt really awkward continuing to network with her because I was like, I don't know what to talk about. Yeah. But I did. I pushed through. She's now the chief editor of Girl Boss. And she and I have been working together on content for the last few months. And I'm like, the world is, you never know.
That is amazing.
It's crazy. Yes. And you never know what you're going to learn or like who you're going to connect with or like, you know, who's going to open what doors for you. So that is worth it. Mm-hmm. The LinkedIn stuff, I got to be so honest. You need to do what feels right for your brand. And you like answered this so perfectly. You're like, it makes sense for me. I'm in content. Mm-hmm. If you're in marketing, get over the awkwardness. Yeah. Suck it up. If you're a software engineer, I literally could not care less. Yeah. You have to think about what your brand is and where would it make sense for your brand to show up? Like a Coca-Cola ad at the gym doesn't make sense. A Nike ad at the gym makes sense. So me advertising myself on LinkedIn, that adds up. Me advertising myself on GitHub, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So be thoughtful about what you are as a product. Like I hate to say it, but if you think about it from a marketing perspective, it becomes a lot less emotional and personal. And suddenly you realize you're just selling your experience to get ahead.
Yeah. Okay.
Game is wild.
Yes, it is very wild. But sometimes we just got to play it, unfortunately. And, you know, it will work to your benefit if you just go along with it, right? Okay, so we have gotten our job. We are thriving in our careers. Now we're trying to get promoted, okay? So do you have any, like, practical steps to help us get promoted?
Yes. Number one, there is no promotion without data. And there's no data without evidence that you have impacted your team or the business that you work within or for. Mm-hmm. You talk about your to-do list, which I love. Yeah. I'm the exact same. Keep a list of every single win. I don't care how small it is. Mm-hmm. And that's helpful for two reasons. Reason number one, it's the end of your year. It's time for you to start pitching for your promotion. Suddenly you have data to back it up. Number two, mental health, because it gets really awkward asking for a raise where even me sometimes in my job, I'm like, I don't deserve to be here. I'm like, I'm not very smart. I'm a personality hire. But then you look at this list and you're like, oh, wait.
I did that.
And I continue to do that. So keep your list. And then you also need to be really thoughtful about how you start conversations around promotions. You can't be coming from a place of give me this or I'm going to leave. It's a conversation and it's an ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking about your career growth, talk to your manager about it. Ask your manager where they see you and focus on two things. Number one is what skills do you need to beef up in order to get promoted? And number two, how much money are you looking to make? Mm. And you need to be honest about both of those and make it an ongoing conversation with your manager so they can support you and so that they can see the evidence that you've achieved these things you've said you've achieved.
I like how you said it has to be an ongoing conversation, because one thing I think a lot of people miss is that, okay, so say November 1st is your year end and then that's the day that you decide to talk to your manager about a raise. Your manager cannot give you a raise because they just found out that you're, or a promotion or a raise, whatever, because they're just finding out that you're interested in, you know, looking to get to the next level. But if you've been talking about it from January 1st and every month in your one-on-one, you're like, okay, so how am I on track to do X, Y, Z? You know, what are the steps that I am needing to do to reach? Then I feel like it's more likely that you're on the track to the raise. Or if 100%. They tell you no raise is possible, at least you know from way before, right?
Yeah, like it's all about, you have to plant the seed. Like you need to have data to back it up. You need to build that relationship. Mm-hmm. You can't show up, like you said, at year end and be like, okay, and where's the check?
Yes.
Where is she? Because she's not coming.
Yeah.
Like you need to be prepared.
Unfortunately, she's not coming.
She's lost in the mail. Yes. I will say though, in this economy, a lot of companies are cutting back on promotions and raises.
Makes sense.
So usually, I mean, like my advice 4 years ago would have been, oh, if they don't give you a raise 2 years in a row, it's a sign to walk. You're being underpaid. Mm-hmm. We're in a place where a lot of organizations, big and small, are struggling.
Yeah.
So this is a year where I think, listen, we're never going to give major corporations a break because capitalism. But what we are going to do is be realistic. Yeah. Like, is this the year you get a $40,000 pay bump? It's not.
It's not.
It's not.
The economy's not economying.
It's not. It's not economisting.
Yeah.
It's simply not
it's
adding
struggling.
Up. It's she's me and counting.
Yeah.
She was me trying to figure out how long we've known each other.
I can't. Okay, let's talk about job hopping, because one way to get more money is by job hopping. You know, I see people, you know, leave their job, move to another one. So could you share about what job hopping looks like and why it helps you get more money?
Yes. Okay, so let's define job hopping. It's basically this term that boomers gave because they don't want us to be happy.
Yes.
Kidding, but not really. It's literally a term derived from like folks in the boomer generation, so to speak, to describe people who move through roles really quickly. Okay. So maybe you do 6 months in one gig, you're done, you move to the next. I've got two stances on this. One is my personal, one is how employers will see it. I will say employers will see job hopping as a red flag if it's consistent. Okay. So if it's been 4 years and every job has been 6 months, yeah, they're going to say, ooh, why am I going to invest in training you? You're going to be gone in six months. So you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
My personal stance is you can job hop as long as you're smart about it, because you'll never make more money than when you leave.
Yeah.
And you only negotiate your way into a company once. So you need to make that count. If you're someone who gets bored easily, which to be honest was me at the beginning of my career, every year I had a new job. You should do one of two things. Pick a really, really big company where you can move internally and there's a zillion different options for you.
Yes.
Or pick consulting. Like, work for a consulting agency and have multiple clients that you rotate through over the course of every year. So you have full-time permanent employment. You have that security, but you are not getting bored every single time. So if you are going to, if this is your second time job hopping, fine. It's not a big deal. If this is the only way you move jobs, I guarantee there will be a recruiter out there who's going to be like, are you going to quit?
Yeah.
You're just going to quit.
Six months, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a year, I don't think counts as job hopping.
Okay.
I don't think a year is job hopping at all. That's okay. A long time.
Yeah. It is a long time.
A year counts.
Yeah. Because I remember I started my first job in 2018. I think it was like May 2018. And then by August, I was like, yo, I can't do this anymore.
And I'm out.
But then everyone was like, oh, stay at least 2 years, 2 years. And I was like, guys, I don't think I can do that. But I stayed until May of the next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it was in the same company. Like, I moved to another team in BMO. But yeah, my manager was upset.
Really?
But my next manager was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Like, you stayed there for a year. Like, she was even happy that I had the experience before. And like, she was like, this is a great asset to our team. So I think everyone just looks at job hopping differently, right?
Yeah, I also think though, like, you kind of have to, it comes down to where you're at in your life. Like, sometimes what's most important is having the lights on, having food on the table. Yes. Let's just keep the job to make it easy. But I was in the same boat when I was at BMO. I lived at home. All I had was like my debt for books I had to pay off for school. Like, it wasn't, I was very privileged in that it wasn't like a crippling financial burden.
Yeah.
But you do kind of have to think about what's more important right now in my life. Is it the money or my mental health? Mm. And at the time when it was time for me to move jobs, I was like, I'm miserable.
Yeah.
Like, I hate waking up doing this job. Mm. So I moved and it got better. And then I was like, a year later, I hate this too.
Yeah.
So and there's nothing wrong with that, because all of that hopping, I've been in the same job at Intuit for 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm thriving. Like, yeah. I love it. I could do this another 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So there's no harm in job hopping. I think people just vilify you doing what's right for you when it doesn't align
with what they want for you.
With what they think is,
yes,
what's right for you.
Good point. So my next question was actually going to be like, were you deliberate in your quote-unquote job hopping? So yes.
big yes. Honestly, and it wasn't even that I was like, oh, I want to diversify my experience. I was just sad.
Yeah.
Like, sad.
And we like to be happy.
We love being happy.
Yes.
My goal was to stay places longer. Like, I shouldn't say every job I hated. The first job right out of school was, the worst job I've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
The people were amazing. Like, I actually stand by my experience with like BMO as a company was really positive. Mm-hmm. Like, the people were great. It was just, I wasn't crazy about the work itself.
Yeah.
So the first couple jobs didn't love, but then when I got into the true recruiting and less the admin side, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. So that's when the hops were more intentional, because it's like, okay, if I want to become a senior recruiter, I need to do capital markets and I need to do tech.
Okay.
And I need to do this. Whereas before it was like hopping out of necessity, because I just could not wake up another day and go to
yeah.
that job.
No, I feel you, because I felt the same way in my last corporate job. I was like, I loved my job before, and now I got a promotion and I am miserable. Like, I'm quite.
Oh, wow, same team you got the promo that you hated?
It was the same larger team, but like, okay. I was reporting to a different manager. That was a whole other,
slightly different experience.
Yeah, slightly different experience. Yeah, so I literally was like, to my old manager, I miss you. Like, yeah,
because
we're still in the same larger team.
Yeah.
But they're like, her and my new manager were equals basically, and like, I was on the new team. Yeah, there was a lot going on in that team. Our whole team basically left. It was not good.
And I bet you they did nothing to look into that.
Oh, when I left, The funny thing is, when I left, they offered me the world. Like, it was like, okay, we're, because I can't even, it's such a long story, but basically, like, they offered me, like, okay, we'll give you a new job, we'll get you more money, we'll get you this. I was like, guys, I've been complaining about this for, like, so long. Like,
But that's what's so crazy is, like, companies only value you when you realize you're going to walk away when they're not a great company or, like, it's not a great leader. Because it's not always the company, especially at a company that big.
Yeah,
like,
it's huge.
Different culture on every team.
Yeah.
Massive. Like, the teams I worked with at BMO were, I loved them. Like, I loved the people. It was just the work itself was like,
ideal. I know. And ooh. I think at big companies, it's easy to just get into, like, I had so many administrative roles and I'm like, this is not my job.
Were you
job.
Not a senior manager?
Like,
why am I doing admin?
Okay.
Hire us. We'll restructure you.
Yeah. Right.
Respectfully.
How can someone assess their financial situation before making a job switch? Like, I know, It's easy for us to say, oh, yeah, go and move to a new job, like, if it makes sense for you. But, like, how do we know if it makes sense? What factors do you think someone should consider?
Yeah, there's so much. Like, I think career moves are so personal because money is personal, but because it fundamentally changes your lifestyle. So take an inventory on the non-financial things, too. Like, are you now working from home? If the answer is yes, that's also saving you money commuting. Yes. Like, that's saving you money even on, like, silly things like makeup. Yeah. I wear makeup most days I go into the office. I have to buy more than when I worked from home in the pandemic. Like, those little things, like, pay attention to that. Pay attention to flexibility. In my current company, I don't need to request time off if I'm going to a 3-hour appointment in the middle of the day. My last company, I did.
Yeah.
So you have to look at the non-financials, but money-wise, think about it from a cash today versus cash tomorrow perspective. Cash today is your salary. You're getting paid that biweekly. Cash today is your signing bonus. Maybe you're getting a lump sum. Cash today could also kind of be, you know, your year-end bonus. But there's cash tomorrow, which is your stocks. Are they doing RRSP matching? Mm-hmm. How do they financially contribute to your investments? Is there, like, a stock purchase program? So you have to look at what money today versus money tomorrow is to look at the total package. And you need to look at your cost of living today and your cost of living tomorrow. Because 3 years from now, if you're looking at buying a house, let's pretend you don't get a raise for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Can you still afford that house?
Yeah.
So you really need to, don't be short-sighted in that you're only looking at salary, but that's the only thing that's going to pay rent. Your stocks aren't paying rent.
It's true. I saw this girl recently. Her name is Sinia, and her page is called Financed on Instagram.
I love that name.
Yeah, right?
That's so good.
And she shares about, like, travel and finance and also just, like, her career trajectory. I think she's – you've probably seen her post. Like,
I'm sure I have,
about, like, oh, in this year I was making this much. Now I'm making, like, $300,000 or something. Yeah, like, she's been job hopping very frequently. But she recently got laid off from PayPal, and she was sharing how, like – she just realized that she was focusing so much on, like, oh, yeah, my total compensation is $300,000 because I have, you know, stock options. I have this. I have that. But she wasn't focused on the salary that they're actually giving today. So I think, as you said, cash today is really important. Cash tomorrow, important as well. But, like, what are they giving you right now? What's coming into your bank account every 2 weeks? That's something you should really prioritize when you are thinking of, like, even when you're comparing a job off, maybe two job offers. What is coming into your bank account today? Because she didn't have enough time for those stock options to even mature.
Like, fully vest. Yeah,
because she was laid off before they could, right?
So that's what's scary too about stock is, let's say your company gets into a scandal. Let's talk like Twitter.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Twitter. Yeah. Your stock 4 years ago, their job offers. Mm. Competing against any time a candidate told me they were debating between our offer and Twitter's offers, I was biting my nails because they would – hey, and they would give you so much stock.
Oh, no.
What do you think? Their stock is worth diddly squat
now. So, like, I didn't even think of that.
Like, your stock today might be great, and as stable as a company might be, stable is it? Like, there's no industry that's not going to be disrupted by AI. So stock is great, and it's important. It's not paying the bills. Not today.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
I think about Twitter a lot. Elon keeps me up at night.
He's annoying.
Did you see him at Coachella?
No, I did not.
Honestly, protect yourself.
I feel like
don't.
I've muted everything, so I cannot see him. I literally muted his name because I was like, I
don't have the space for this in my life.
I don't. I really
Mr.
don't.
Mr. Musk, I can't. I saw him, like, dancing at Coachella, and I was like, this man's a cyborg. I was like, this is not a real person.
Okay, Emily, you've dropped so many gems during this conversation. Thank you so much. I have one more question for you.
Tell me everything.
This is Don't Go Broke Trying. So if there is one piece of advice that you could give my listeners to make sure they don't go broke trying to build their career, career, what would that piece of advice be?
Oh, it's so good. I would say, don't go broke trying to fit in with the office culture you start off at. Mm. And what I mean is, when you first start working in finance or first start working in an industry, don't invest your whole self mentally and financially into that. Invest in your development. Don't invest in your development at that company alone. Ooh, like your that company, the second the economy gets tough, they're going to drop you.
Bye-bye.
Avita Singh. You're gone, you're out, you're never going to hear from them again. So if you're spending all of your money and time investing in the certifications they advise, the certifications that they look for, going to the conferences they sponsor, only networking internally, you are not actually investing in yourself. You just think you are. So be selfish. Think about your career. If your career is going to take you on a path that doesn't exist at that company, how do you find mentors who get you there? Are you investing in certifications and courses and conferences that get you to where you want to go, not just keep you at that company? Because the worst thing you can do is limit yourself and limit your beliefs that you're only able to achieve what you already have. Like, yes, the imposter syndrome is real. And the minute you start thriving is the minute you believe you can accomplish basically anything. That was so corny, I could throw up.
No, I feel like I just got a word. Like, you just preached to all of us.
It's almost Sunday.
Yes. Thank you, Emily. That was really good. I feel like I learned a lot, even though, you know, I don't have a typical career right now. Maybe one day I'll go back to 9 to 5.
The way I'm going to poach and headhunt you is going to go crazy.
I'm ready. Actually, no, I'm not ready yet. But when I'm ready.
When you're ready, I better be the first phone call.
I'm like, hey, Emily, I'm ready to get back into the corporate world.
I'd be like, into it, you better open a position right now. I have someone.
Yeah. So, Emily, thank you so much for coming on. If someone wanted to find you and like learn more about the services you offer, listen to your podcast, connect with you, where would they find you?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, this was so fun. Like, I am so excited to, like, even thinking about what we talked about, I can't wait to listen back. Yes. But you can check me out on Instagram and TikTok at emily.b.recruiter. You can listen to my podcast on all platforms, the Straight Shooter Recruiter Podcast. And I'm also on YouTube at Emily Durham. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Do you also feel this way where you're like, yes, have I listed all of the things?
I know.
I forgot. I'm also a writer at Canadian Business. You can check out my
columns
there.
Yes, she's a whole writer, guys.
Can spell.
Yes, I'll make sure to link all of these links down below. Emily, if you forgot anything, you can always just send me the link.
And amazing, we'll probably make sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening. I really, really, really do appreciate you. If you got this far, please make sure you share this on your Instagram story and tag me, tag Emily, and tag the podcast at Don't Go Broke Trying. We don't like to hoard knowledge, okay? There's so many gems dropped here, and I think the world should know about them. So make sure you tag all of us, okay, on your Instagram story. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you in the next episode. Bye. Thank you for listening. I hope you learned something that will help you not go broke. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, please remember to leave a review. And don't hoard this knowledge. Share it with a friend that you think may find this valuable. This episode was produced by Omelia Visuals with music by Wonder Girl.